Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome. This is Rabbi Michael Katz here. It is Judaism 101.9. It is a Wednesday afternoon. It's just gone 10 past 2 on this Wednesday afternoon, and it is a beautiful time. And if we think about what a beautiful time it is, perhaps let's just reflect back in history and think about how at this period of time, first of all, if we to reflect back on where we were last year at this time or the year before that at this time, I think we can safely say that we're in a far, far better place and space, just a headspace of Jews and Judaism and Israel and all of that stuff, rather be in this year on the 21st or 22nd of Cheshvan, that is coming up tomorrow, than last year or the year before that. And as we are now in this period of time after the Chagim and building up now to the festival of Chanukah and thinking about the month of Kislev, and of course, yeah, people are beginning with their holiday plans here in Johannesburg, and we're thinking about where we're going to be in a month from now, and where and our kids are off going on all sorts of programs overseas and all sorts of wonderful things. And it just seems that kind of there's the feeling of having turned the corner. Well, I wanted to look back at a few incidents that happened over the times. You know, we always do that at the beginning of this show, looking back in Jewish history. And did you know that on the 22nd of Cheshvan in 1755, there was a great earthquake that struck Portugal? Now, it was an earthquake that I think registered about 7.7 on the Richter scale, if there was a Richter scale then, but I think they estimate that that's what it would have been. It destroyed a tremendous amount of Portugal, Morocco, that kind of area. It happened on the 22nd of Cheshvan in 1755, and it struck primarily Lisbon in Portugal, and it destroyed much of the city. And that included the courthouse of the Inquisition. Now, if we think back to the Spanish Inquisition that took place between 1478 and 1834, that there was an Inquisition. The Inquisition meant that because of the feeling of the Spanish government and under the influence of the church, that there was a lot of heresy and there was a lot of anti-God and anti Jesus kind of feelings around, and they used it as an opportunity to expunge that from their society. But of course, it was probably the best cover of all for the Jews, for an attack on the Jews, rather, for blatant and outward anti-Semitism. While yes, it officially targeted others, the main culprits and the main people who suffered under the Inquisition, of course, was the Jewish community, who were banished from Spain. The Inquisition banished them from Spain unless they chose to convert. And there were all sorts of kangaroo courts and things that were done to the Jews, torturous methods that they employed. And of course, the burning at the stake and all those other wonderful and inventive acts of anti-Semitism that were carried out by the church against the Jewish community in order to try and force either conversion or expulsion. 1478 to 1834, Spanish Inquisition, that's how long it lasted. Yeah, it wasn't just an overnight kind of a fix. It was a few hundred years. And a great earthquake came along, perhaps we need to say, sign of God, that shook up that whole neighborhood in 1755. Yeah, it took a long time for them to get the message, but it included the destruction of the courthouse of the Inquisition. So you want to know who's on whose side, perhaps it's a good thing to think about. And then on the 23rd of Cheshvan, which is going to be this coming Friday, it was a holiday of the Chashmonaim from 137 before the Common Era. Because in Talmudic times, the 23rd of Cheshvan was commemorated the day on which the stones of the altar, which were defiled by the Greeks, were removed from the Holy Temple. Now, if we think about it, this was a great precursor. On the 23rd of Cheshvan, 1 month before Chanukah, there was this or before we celebrate Hanukkah rather, on the 23rd of Cheshvan was the Cheshvan Naim's holiday for the removal of the stones that were defiled by the Greeks. You know, they went about their business of defiling the temple. That was what the Greeks did. They didn't absolutely destroy it and pull it to the ground, but rather defiling it, taking away its sanctity. And these great stones were removed from there on the 23rd of Cheshvan in 137 before the Common Era. Now, perhaps even more fascinating is the fact that if we go further back in history to 104 before the Common Era, it was on the 27th of Cheshvan. So that's going to come up next week. 27th of Cheshvan in the year 1657 from creation. Or 2104 before the Common Era, the earth dried, completing the 365-day duration of the Great Flood that wiped out all life on earth except for the 8 human beings and 2 of each species of non-kosher animals and 7 of each of the kosher animals that were in Noah's Ark. And it was on this day that God commanded Noah to come out of the Ark, to repopulate, to resettle, and to civilize the earth. This was the 27th of Cheshvan. Now, we've got to remember that it started to rain on the 17th of Cheshvan, and a year later, on the 27th of Cheshvan of the following year, the flood was officially over. Noah was told, come out of the ark, go into the world, populate, settle, civilize the earth, restart, rekindle, and re-begin. So it is absolutely a time for new beginnings. It's not a time only to think about a bad and sad and difficult past, or to reflect back on 2 years of an awful time that Israel has had, the Jews around the world have had. But I think that we are safe to say that this is a period of time when there is an opportunity, a possibility of a rejuvenation, of a rebirth, of a reset, of a recalibration. I don't know about you, I find it absolutely miraculous that you don't want to talk too soon, but it's miraculous that we're sitting here now, that all the living hostages have been returned, that we are only 4 left of the ones who have lost their lives, and it's miraculous in anybody's book, I think, that this has happened. Yes, there's been tremendous pain and suffering, and yes, there's been tremendous heartache, and yes, it's come at a huge, huge cost, not only to Israel and Jews everywhere, but to our family of Am Yisrael, a huge, huge cost. But there is an opportunity now for a reset, for a recalibration, for us to look at what we did wrong, what we did right, how we can make things good for the future, and how we can look towards the Hanukkah menorah and the coming month of Kislev. This is Shabbos Mevorchim of Kislev that is coming up on the Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, late next week. The idea of bringing light, of lighting up the world, of rekindling those flames, of making the world a better place once again. The goalposts have changed and things have changed, but there's a tremendous opportunity that awaits us, and it's all spelled throughout these miraculous things that happened in history.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Yes, this is Rabbi Michael Katz here with you, and we're on Judaism 101.9. And as you well know, when a new Jewish month is around the corner, we have a Shabbat Mevorachim on the Shabbos before. So for most of the months, except for the month of Tishrei, we have what we call Shabbat Mevorachim, a Shabbos on which we bless the new month. For Tishrei, we say God blesses the month, and while we still observe it in a way as a Shabbos Mevorachim, but it's a Shabbos of blessing that comes the other way around. It's from God directly to us. Here, God empowers us to bless the month, and we can take a Shabbos like the one that is coming up and spend time thinking about how great the coming month is going to be. And by doing that, we elicit that bracha, that blessing that comes min hashamayim, that comes from God. We say the brachas, we give the blessings, and we wish and we hope that it'll be a month that is filled with light and joy and simcha and all the good and wonderful things. And certainly God will respond, because this is something that we have been entrusted with, and we have the power to actually elicit that bracha, that blessing. So on this coming Shabbos, we are going to be blessing the new month of Kislev. Now, what is contained in the month of Kislev, which is coming up starting from next week, Thursday? There is so much coming up and such a beautiful and incredible Chag, a festival called Chanukah. And while it is some time in advance, it has been mentioned that there are a lot of people, of course, who are away at the time. And sometimes when people go away, they feel that there is not that great a necessity to celebrate the festival, perhaps, as they would be if they were at home. On the contrary, this is the kind of festival that travels. This is the kind of festival that can go with you and is celebrated everywhere and around the world and in such a positive and beautiful way, celebrated with light. It is an incredible chag, an incredible festival of Chanukah. And it is not just about the Chanukah gelt and the Chanukah gifts and eating oily foods and having donuts, sufganiyot, etc. It is a popular festival, of course, because of that, both in Israel and certainly in America, where it kind of rose, I think, in the ranks of the festivals because they needed something that would combat or kind of stand up for the Jewish people at the time when the Christian world or the world out there was putting up trees with lights on them and commemorating a festival of their own that comes late in December. But here we have the opportunity to celebrate a beautiful, powerful, and important spiritual chag called Chanukah. And it's important that we know about it. And so therefore, today and whenever else we can chat again before the festival of Chanukah, I'd like to share some insights perhaps and some things and some rules and instructions about this great and wonderful festival that is coming up. And primarily, I suppose, because at the time in later December, a lot of people are away, a lot of the shows won't be taking place, a lot of things close down. And so here is an opportunity in advance to get a little bit of an advance insight into the festival of Chanukah. Now, you might ask, the festival of Chanukah is 8 days long. And why is it 8 days long? Well, it says that the sages taught that on the 25th of Kislev, so now remember, we are today on the 21st day of Cheshvan, so it's in just over a month's time, 25th of Kislev, the days of Chanukah are 8. On those days, we're told, and this is a quote directly from the Talmud, if we think about and we look it up, if we want to know exactly where it comes from, we are talking about a Talmudic source that tells us that on the festival one may not eulogize and one may not fast on this festival. And this is because when the Greeks entered the sanctuary, they defiled all the oil that was in the sanctuary. When the Chashmonaim, the monarchy of the Chashmonaim, overcame them, and we know it as the Maccabees, and they emerged victorious over them, they searched and they found only one cruse of oil that remained with the seal of the high priest. And there was sufficient oil there to light the candelabra for only one day. Remember, they lit a seven-branched candelabra, a seven-branched menorah that was lit every single day in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple. They had the oil there in storage. It had to have the seal of the Kohen Gadol, of the high priest. The Greeks did not find it necessary to, or nor was that in their kind of way to go and destroy everything. All they wanted to do was to take away its sanctity. They took away its seal. They took away the fact that it was a symbol of the Jewish connection with God and with spirituality and a soul kind of a connection. And they said, no, you can do these things in a very, very physical way. Remember, the Greeks were pushing the physical agenda, the material agenda. So they defiled all the oil, but the Chashmonaim, then the Maccabees found just one little container of oil, which was enough for one day. And a great miracle occurred, and they lit the candelabra from it, and it burned for 8 days. And the next year, the sages instituted those days and made them holidays with the recitation of Hallel and the prayer of thanksgiving. Now, we've got to say that there is actually more than that, because seven represents all that is found within this world. There are 7 days of the week, seven planets, classical planets, and seven musical notes. In fact, the world itself was created in 7 days. So seven is the number of the uniformity, of the regularity, of the natural world order. Then comes the number eight. And this number represents something that is above and beyond, that which is, doesn't fit into the neat slots that hold the bits and pieces of our lives. It doesn't conform with everything in this world. The number eight is transcendent. It is greater than. And the godly eight is the number of miracles. If we think of anything that has to do with the number eight, it has always got to do with going beyond nature. It's always got to do with the idea of miraculous, of something above and beyond. And so therefore, this is what we actually think about when we celebrate Chanukah. It wasn't only the idea of the fact that they had to wait 8 days for the oil to be remanufactured, for the ability to be able to light the menorah from freshly made olive oil that had to be taken from the first drop of Shemen Zaitzach, from the first drop of pure oil from the olives. This was an out-and-out open miracle that happened in the Beit HaMikdash, that happened in the temple, and gave rise to this great and wonderful festival, which kind of told us something much more about the Jewish people, actually, than it did about the miracle and about God itself, God himself. Because, in fact, if we take a look very carefully at what the Jewish people could have done at the time of the Chag, of the festival, or the, rather at the time of the finding of that cruse of oil, they could have used regular oil. In fact, there is a Jewish law that if you cannot find special oil with the seal of the Kohen Gadol, you could use regular oil. But they understood something intrinsic. This was what the Greeks were out to prove, that regular oil could be used. They didn't want to play into their hand. And at the same time, they were challenging God, and they were saying, you know what, we are going to stick out for the best. You know, all too often we spend our lives trying to find the easiest ways to circumvent, to find the easiest ways to do things, to find the loopholes in every law and to do things in a way that suits us. But here we come to the Chag, the festival of Chanukah, which besides the light and all the beautiful things that it teaches us to go for the best, to do things in the best possible way. How about that? To give your children the best education, to give your families the best life, to make your Shabbos the best Shabbos, to make your tefillin the best kind of tefillin that you can get, to give tzedakah in the most beautiful way. All of our mitzvahs, to do them in a beautiful way, not just what they would call in the classics Yotzer Zayin, not just to make it as the easiest possible way, in the way whereby we can just be shot of it as easily as possible, to keep Shabbos just in a way that kind of suits my needs and so on, and find every allowance in the book to be able to do whatever it is that I would like to do. No, our challenge is the Chanukah kind of a challenge, and it is very, very significant and special. We've got to understand that that was what we're told that God responded to. He responded to the fact that the Jewish people at the time, the Maccabees, the Hashmonaim, said, we are not going to settle for second best. We are not going to go for the loophole. We are not going to do the just let's get by kind of an attitude and action of how we're keeping this Judaism. We are going to go for the best. We are going to only accept that on our menorah is going to burn in the temple, it's going to burn the only oil that originally was ordained for that oil to be, the oil with the seal of the Kohen Gadol. And because of that, they merited to find that cruse of oil. And because of that, the oil managed to burn. The Jewish people would not accept second best. And it's a very, very important limud, a very important lesson for us all to learn from this dimension, this aspect of Chanukah. Now, the Chanukah candles need to be lit after dark. And there are all sorts of customs about when exactly it's lit. Is it after it starts getting dark? Is it after nightfall? But the purpose is to bring light into darkness. but they need to be lit early enough that someone will be around to see them. So we've got to make sure that it's when people in the family are able to attend that lighting, and the lights need to be seen so they can serve their function of reminding others of the great miracle that God wrought. In fact, there is a whole section of the laws of Hanukkah, of what we call Pirsumei Nisa, of demonstrating, of outwardly showing this great and wonderful miracle of Hanukkah, whether it's lighting menorahs in public places or whether it's just in your home, making sure that the majority of people in the home, in the house, or people who pass by your windows or people who pass by your gates, yes, in this country, not that easy to light on the street outside your gates as they do perhaps in the old city of Yerushalayim, of Jerusalem, and it's a very, very awesome thing to be able to see that. But we have it in a way whereby it's got the maximum publicity, the maximum number of people seeing it. It's an important facet to see, A, that we're keeping this chag, B, that we're trying to light up the darkness, and C, that we are advertising and showing off to the world the great and wonderful miracles that God does on behalf of his people.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and welcome back. This is Rabbi Michael Katz. This is Judaism 101.9, and it is the great show of Jewish learning, of thinking about what we knew, what we thought we knew, what we don't know, what we didn't know, what we need to find out, and things that are amazing that keep on cropping up in our Jewish calendar, and perhaps we don't really know all about them. So we've been discussing the upcoming month of Kislev and the festival of Hanukkah. Did you know that Hanukkah is the only Jewish holiday that's not mentioned in the 24 books of the Bible? Now, if you go from Bereshit right the way through to the end of Tanakh, there are 24 books of the Bible. One of them actually is Megillat Esther, because I know people might have been thinking Purim as well, but it's not mentioned in any of the 24 books of the Bible. That's because it was sealed. This composition of the Tanakh was sealed by the men of the Great Assembly, who flourished 2 centuries before the Hanukkah miracle. It doesn't have its own tractate in the Talmud that discusses its observances. Instead, it gets a kind of a, by the way, kind of a mention in the Tractate Shabbos in the context of discussing Shabbos candles, the Hanukkah candles, and by extension, the Hanukkah holiday, get their time in the Talmud. Only there and only in that reference. So it's kind of under the cover of all the laws of Shabbos and Shabbos candles that Hanukkah gets mentioned. It's not fleshed out in every detail in the Talmud. But we've got to think about the fact that in that, isn't that a sign rather of its, in inverted commas, humility, the humbleness, the quietness of the festival of Hanukkah in terms of its references? But the very powerful thought, as we conveyed before, of the fact that this entire miracle was something that happened from the Jewish people themselves wanting to do the best, wanting to make it really something significant and special. If we think about it, yes, all our chagim, all our festivals have got that partnership between God and us, whether it was getting out of Egypt in, as we celebrate Pesach, whether it was getting the Torah and standing at the foot of Mount Sinai, whether it was sounding the shofar for Rosh Hashanah and so on. Yes, there's a godly component and there's our component. And here too, of course, there was the miracle that God wrought, but this was something that was instigated, that was actually profoundly pushed by the people, as we would say, down here on the ground. Everything here, our people, Am Yisrael, making sure that we did things in the best possible fashion. And therefore, not necessarily any less significant than any of the other chagim, but perhaps in a way even more important. It's for us to try and light up the world. It's for us to try and show that beautiful, beautiful strength of the great miracles that God does on our behalf. It's for us to be proud of celebrating this festival, this great chag. Yes, with great instructions that come later on from the Rabbanan, from the rabbis who teach us exactly how we have to do it and how we celebrate this chag, but it doesn't make it any less significant. On the contrary, perhaps even more so. I'll be back with you to sum up right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Yes, Rabbi Michael Katz here with you. Judaism 101.9, great to be in your company. We're coming towards the end of our 45 minutes or so that we have on a Wednesday. And just to add a interesting fact about Hanukkah, you know that most Jewish holidays can begin on only 4 out of the 7 days of the week. We've discussed this before, the way that the Jewish calendar works. There are only 4 days on which every chag could occur. Now, it's not the same 4 days for every chag, you get it, but each festival is limited to only 4 of the 7 days of the week. For example, the first day of Rosh Hashanah can only be a Monday, a Tuesday, a Thursday, or Shabbos. It can never be on a Sunday, a Wednesday, or a Friday. However, when it comes to Hanukkah, since the preceding the month preceding Hanukkah, which we're in now, Cheshvan, can have 29 or 30 days, Hanukkah can actually begin on any day of the week besides for a Tuesday. Isn't that fascinating? Hanukkah can be on any day of the week besides a Tuesday. It's got the advantage of 6 of the 7 days of the week rather than the usual 4 days of the week that is limited to or limits all the other festivals. Now, in a way, it tells us that Hanukkah is a festival of many more choices, perhaps, than the other Chagim. But perhaps it also gives it much more of a universal approach. It is something that can be done and that should be done, that's easily accomplished. And hopefully we'll be able to accomplish it well and beautifully in this coming year, knowing, as we do know, all the ins and outs and all the intricacies of this beautiful Chag that is coming up in the month of Kislev that we will bless on this coming Shabbat. So I want to wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbos up ahead, and a great month of Kislev, and eventually getting to the great Chag of Hanukkah coming up a little bit later in the year. Look forward to being with you again, same time, same place next week for another exciting episode of Judaism 101.9.